you love gardening but worry that as you age, you might not be able to keep doing it? Well, you're not alone. Our guest today has written a new book that addresses that very issue. This is Garden Talk on The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. And with us is Rhonda Fleming Hayes. She's an award-winning writer, speaker, and photographer. She's volunteered as an Extension Master Gardener since 2000. She's a member of GardenCom, the Minnesota State Horticultural Society, the Herb Society of America, and is a past trustee of the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. Her latest book is called Garden for Life: Strategies for Easier, Greener, More Joyful Gardening as We Age. What do you think? Have you changed your gardening routine as you've aged? Would you like some advice on how to make things a bit simpler? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.com. Rhonda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet. Are you in Minnesota right now?
I'm not in Minnesota. We cheat and we spend our winters in New Orleans where our daughter lives.
I thought your bushes in the background
were green. You can see the greenery behind me. Yes.
I was like, hey, that's not the Minnesota that I'm familiar with. So, well, good for you. I'm jealous. So, speaking of which, from what I could tell from your biography, you've lived pretty much everywhere. That must be. You have a wide variety of experiences gardening.
Yeah, I grew up in California, and then following my husband's career, been in Memphis, Tennessee, Kansas twice, Illinois twice, Iowa for a very brief time, over to England, and then back in the past 12 years in Minnesota. Yeah. 17 years. Oh my gosh.
Time flies.
I am getting older.
Got to write that down.
Yeah, I need to think about that more.
Yeah, time flies. So, I mean, I've had to move, you know, you establish a garden, you had to move. It can be heartbreaking.
Oh yeah.
How do you prepare yourself for that? I mean, and sometimes you said, you know, you planted even like daffodils and you weren't there in the spring to see them bloom. How do you prepare yourself for that?
Well, I don't think there's any preparation for that. You know, my husband's job was as a troubleshooter. And so sometimes we would move in very quick succession. And I'd plant an apple tree and wouldn't see it bloom. At daffodils, it seemed to be a trend on spring things there.
Okay.
But usually it would happen very quickly, and it was kind of like ripping off a Band-Aid. And hopefully I hadn't done too much to that garden yet. But it gave me the chance to try on lots of different gardens and lots of different climates. So in the long run, good training for whatever I do now.
Well, that's what I was thinking. You know, that did give you good preparation for writing books, number one.
Oh, definitely,
because you're used to that. So so let's get to this book. Now, I really love the beginning of this in your preface where you're talking about your visit to the Mayo Sports Clinic. Could you tell that story?
Well, I was, when was that? Well, before COVID, probably. And I was having trouble with my shoulder. And my very inspiring gardener friend across the street, who is more than a decade older than me, said, oh, well, they fixed me up at the Mayo. And I said, the sports clinic? Yeah, just go there. So I'm in the waiting room, and there are lots of very tall young people because they're basketball players. And when you walk into that room right beforehand, there is a large glass window, and there is the training court for the Minnesota Lynx and the Timberwolves. And I'm not a big, huge basketball fan, but I was impressed. So I'm sitting there, you know, in the waiting room, and I get called in, and I tell the doctor, you know, hey, gardening is my sport.
And I'd never thought about
it
that way.
And they fixed me up.
It is. It really is. Why don't you, you know, it really is a sport if you think about it. And like you said, you don't really dress for it. You can't really tell that you're you know, the gardening's your sport. There's no jerseys, although maybe there should be. But what does gardening do for us?
Well, it's been described as a full mind-body workout because you're using your large muscles with so many activities like digging and raking and hauling plants around. And then there's the fine motor skills when you're deadheading a plant or you're snipping herbs. And then beyond that physical movement, which they refer to as variety of movement. And that's one of the reasons why it's so good, because there's all these different movements all at once. But then you go beyond that and you've got the mental health aspect. And people talk about getting lost in their gardening. You know, they go out there for a few minutes and they look up and, oh, the sun's setting, and they've been out there just completely, you know, removed from their troubles, out there connecting with nature.
So, you know, that's a type of thing that when you do stop gardening, it's a big loss in so many ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people in my world right now have started, you know, they're my age, and they're talking about downsizing. Do we have to move? Can we age in place? And then I say, oh, well, can you garden in place? You know, and it's one thing to outfit a home for aging in place, but it's plants in your yard, you know, and everybody's situation is different, obviously, but, you know, plants don't stay in place. They keep growing. So it's much more difficult to know if you can continue to garden where you've tended this beautiful landscape over the years. And it can be heartbreaking. It can be a hard decision, but deciding whether to stay in place and make the garden more manageable is one alternative. And then the other is a lot of these people that I know are downsizing to townhouses and condos, but they're still gardening. They're finding ways to still garden.
There's lots of options, and you do write about that later on in the book. But before we get there, why don't you, you know, I think a lot of us start gardening when we're quite young. Tell us about your grandmother.
Well, my grandmother was from Mississippi, and she, with my mother, moved to Southern California back in the late 30s during the the end of the Depression. And I don't know if they found streets of gold, but my grandmother found gardening for pleasure versus hoeing the vegetable patch and
yeah, sustainability.
Back in the
right?
hot sun of Mississippi and, you know, gardening for sustenance. And there she was gardening for pleasure. And I would follow her around. We just lived down the street. And I would follow her around while she was gardening. And I noticed even back then that her garden in that that little post-war subdivision looked very different than the others. She was foodscaping before her time. She had guavas and oranges and berries and different things growing amongst her flowers and her trees. And it was, you know, just a different look. It was a very full lot. It wasn't like that basic one lawn, two bushes and one tree thing. It was very lush, and it was my idea of paradise. And I didn't have her for very long, but, you know, she taught me a lot, and she planted the seed.
Do you think that gardening also is something that helps with memories, that also helps us have a rich life as we age too?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, those are very strong memories. I can tell you where every plant was in her yard to this day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think we all have that same kind of memory. You do spotlight a number of gardeners in your book, which was really, really fun to read about. And I love the fact that you told them not to clean up their garden when you came to take pictures. Tell us why you did that.
Well, it's important to me. Well, first of all, I wanted to include all these gardeners because I wanted there to be lots of different perspectives and not just it all about me, because they've all got something to add to this whole aging in place idea. Give me that question again. Sorry.
Oh, see, I was getting old. Why not to clean up their gardens?
Oh, not to clean up their garden. Yeah, because I didn't want to photograph or talk to people who have big show gardens. I wanted these to be accessible, doable type gardens. And I don't necessarily want these people to stress when I'm coming over, but I also want it to, you know, I want it to be real. And, you know, none of us, you know, our gardens are never perfect. They're always in progress. And so I would always tell them, oh, don't go to a lot of trouble. And if they would still be nervous, I'd say, I'm really good at cropping a tight shot. So don't worry.
Every time I see pictures of beautiful gardens, I'm like, I want to see what they didn't take a picture of. I'll bet you there's some weeds over there.
I also spent a lot of time walking down streets, taking pictures from the sidewalk of people's yards. And hopefully everybody is okay with that. I actually was chased off one time by a concerned neighbor. But so that was kind of exciting, you know, having the police follow me back home. But, you know, oh, well. Do I look that suspicious?
Kind of a shifty character there. Right? At least it wasn't a dog.
Photographing the book was a real trip.
I'll bet. Well, it is a little intimidating to see those. You know, you go to a garden show or garden tour, and everything is so perfect. And it's like, can I ever measure up to that? I'm only one person. You know, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as gardeners, don't we?
Oh, I've been on garden tours, and let me tell you, the day before is not good. Not fun at all.
And that's part of it too. As we age, we should be taking the pressure off a little bit.
We should let it go. Yeah, we should. You know, you can't change the fact that you're growing older, but you can change your attitude towards the garden.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. Our guest today is Rhonda Fleming Hayes. She's the author of Garden for Life: Strategies for Easier, Greener, More Joyful Gardening as We Age. She can talk to you about some hints, some tricks for helping you ease into the gardening as you get older, but she can also answer your gardening questions. She's got a huge background in gardening. So give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry Mueller today. Next week on the show, Liz Fremont is back to share her gardening wisdom with us. And in the last 30 minutes, Paul Sagan is in to help you with your tree questions. Right now, we're talking about aging with your garden. And we're talking to Rhonda Fleming Hayes. Love to hear your questions. 800-642-1234. So Rhonda, let's get back and talk about right sizing. What do you mean by that? That's a whole chapter or section in your book.
Well, right sizing is finding that sweet spot where gardening still is fun and it offers you all those great benefits for your mind and body. And but you don't want it to be a chore. You don't want it to be these dreaded tasks that you have to do every season. So once again, everybody's yard is different, but some of the strategies are to start to simplify your garden is to maybe divide it into zones. It depends upon how big your garden is. You know, most people have a city lot, but lots of people still have acreage. So you're going to divide it into zones, and you want that area closest to your house to be the most intensely cultivated area, you know, where you've got lots of flowers and maybe more, you know, fussier things or, you know, more bigger display, something like that. And then gradually as you go to the outer zones, you'll want to have plants that are simpler, and you may get to, you know, lower maintenance plants, and you may get to the end, to the edges of your property. If you're in certain conditions, you might consider letting them go a little wild around the edges. You might have to have a discussion with your neighbor about that. It all depends upon where you live, but you know, the pollinators and the birds would thank you for that. And as you get older, you're not wanting to tromp out to the furthest reaches there every time. So it's really cool if you can, kind of guarantee that you have, nice looking plants out your window, different window views, you know, a container of some really brightly colored plant that might be attracting hummingbirds. That might be great to have right out your kitchen window, things like that. So bring those things that really give you the most joy closer to the house so that you can enjoy them more often. And even while you're inside.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And when is it a good time to start thinking about that?
Well, I think people vary because we tend to, it's hard to imagine yourself being older.
It's always 10 years older than you are, right?
There's an expression attributed mostly to Oliver Wendell Holmes that says, old age is always 15 years older than me.
Okay.
And I think, oh, yeah, because until you get older, it's hard to imagine. And so there are some people that are very, you know, diligent, and they hit 55 and they're thinking about, they've got their retirement figured out. They've got it all, you know, and they take care of things. And there are other people that kind of, you know, put it off. And so I think in my book, I'm trying to encourage people to start thinking about it sooner than later so that you don't get surprised or kind of blindsided at the end where suddenly you have this gorgeous garden, but it's just overwhelming you.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Well, we do have a comment from Cheryl in Iron Ridge. Go right ahead, Cheryl.
Hi. I love the show today. I'm really having a good time. Thank you. I'm 73 and have arthritis in my hands, and I love gardening, and I had a beautiful garden in Conover for many years that took hours of work, but I had my husband then too, and he was the sweetest man on earth, and he would come in from outside and say, honey, I weeded your garden this time, so you don't have to do it. But then we moved to Iron Ridge, and I said to my husband, because he was still alive at that time, I said, you know, we just can't have that big garden anymore. So can you make me a 4x8 above ground garden? And he did it, and I have it, and it's perfect. And then secondly, after he died, I bought two of those above ground containers, you know, the brown ones with the four legs, or you can get them in wood or as fancy as you want. And I put all my herbs in there. And then in my 4x8 cute little garden, I only have perennials and pots. Pots are the lifesaver of us all.
That's great, Cheryl. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, Cheryl's got it all figured out.
Yeah.
Yeah, she could have helped me with the book.
There you go.
First, shout out to helpful husbands. Bless them.
Absolutely.
Mine doesn't like to garden, but he helps a lot. So, you know, bless his heart.
Absolutely.
Anytime you can elevate your garden so that you don't have to bend over, that's just a great thing. And I, this year writing the book, I'm using one of those Vigo elevated garden beds. It's real cute, kind of mint green, and it's on legs with wheels, so I can kind of, you know, chase the sun around my patio with it. And I planted a hummingbird haven in it just for fun for my first time with it. And it was so pleasurable to walk out there and just kind of putter around, and I never bent over. I never stooped. I didn't have to do anything. I just sat there and played with it. It was great.
Because it's not the getting down, it's the getting up.
Oh, the getting up. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really a game changer. And anytime you can move to pots versus in ground, that's a good thing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thanks, Cheryl. Let's go to Appleton. And Dave has something he wants to ask. Go ahead.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call. So I've got a very small lawn. I'm going to be digging it up. It's grass now and weeds. Dig it all up, plant three kinds of clover in there. But what else can you recommend that's very low to the ground? I'm talking 3-4 inches. If 5-6 has to be, I'll go that route. The lower the better, maybe some names of plants and where I can get them.
I would suggest that you go to the University of Minnesota Extension website and look under bee lawns. And they have several different plant combinations that they have been testing, trialing for years now. I think one of them has clover and then a type of trefoil and a self-heal. And those are plants that are going to be very low to the ground. They're going to bloom, they're going to attract pollinators, but you're not going to have to worry about mowing. And they are, another thing is you want to be able to step on those plants. So there's always, you know, you have to determine how much traffic is going to go on that lawn. If you're just going to to look at it versus walk on it or play on it. But I think they have a lot of really good information there, and I would direct you to them.
And that was B-Lawns, as it's B-E-E.
B-Lawns, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, with the University of Minnesota Extension website. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, good luck.
Maybe Wisconsin's doing something similar.
I believe so. There's all kinds of, the extensions are doing all great work. Last week we had, I'm spacing his name, DeBole. He's gonna kill me when he finds out, but Neil DeBole. Thank you, Lee. He's here for me. So he was on from the Prairie Nursery, and he was talking about that too. And one of the things that he was talking about was site preparation too. So make sure you do that first correctly, Dave, because that is the key right there, is getting your site preparation done. And then once you get that perfect, then the rest of it will be a lot easier. But as far as where to get it to, there's a lot of places in Wisconsin and around that have native seeds or seed mixes for that. So, yeah, lots of places these days. That's really a great point, too, because if mowing lawn takes a lot of work, a lot of time.
Yeah, congratulations on replacing your lawn.
Absolutely, yeah. So good luck, Dave. We'd love to hear about how that goes for you. So give us a call back once you have that done. So, if you've got a question or a comment, give us a call, 800-642-1234. Let's see. We've talked about the right sizing. We talked about no mow yards and plant choices. We want to talk about plants that are maybe more perennials than annuals. We want to talk about, removing those. Is that a good way to think about changing the plants in our yard?
Well, I kind of think of it as kind of a hierarchy, moving from annuals to perennials to shrubs to trees. So first of all, let's go with annuals. I don't know if anybody still does it. I don't know if it's just public gardens that still make those big in-ground annual displays, like thousands of marigolds or something, but you still see that in people's yards. I would get off the ground and just limit my annuals to containers. And then when it comes to perennials, a lot of our gardens are really, really reliant upon perennials, but I am reducing the number of perennials in my yard because they require a lot of deadheading, dividing, cutting back, things like that. And nowadays, there are so many different kinds of small shrubs, flowering shrubs, fruiting shrubs, fruiting shrubs, that you can almost go ahead and create the same look of a perennial border using smaller shrubs and then going taller to the back with larger shrubs. And shrubs are what you call a one-touch plant. You probably don't have to do a lot for them. You might have to prune or shape a little branch or two or something like that. They're really much more carefree, and you can still create that effect. And then once again, birds and pollinators are just going to really thank you for doing that. So in my book, I talk about creating a bird border of just shrubs of different sizes and different types of blooms and colors and textures, instead of relying so highly on perennials. And there are some perennials that are just really high maintenance. Like, people love daylilies, but pinching off those mushy flowers every day to make them look great, I'm done with that. Coreopsis, those little thready little things, deadheading that, I'm done with that. So perennials are great, but maybe they're a younger person's sport at some point.
But Rhonda, and they then fall off by themselves.
And then anytime you can add small patio trees, understory trees into your yard, there you're once again going to get flowers and fall color, or maybe fruit, but something that's very low maintenance, but still very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think low maintenance has to be low interest.
What about grasses? Do you like to add those in for just a little bit of contrast?
Oh, definitely. I think grasses are kind of like, I refer to them as the onions of the landscape. When you cook, you put onions into a recipe and it tends to bind all these other different flavors together. When you put grasses in, it tends to kind of unite all the different plants in the landscape and give it a more natural appearance. Because, you know, look out your window at a natural landscape, you're going to see grasses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ted in Spooner has a question. Go right ahead, Ted.
Sure.
Yeah, hello. I'm 77 years old. I got a garden that's 82 feet square.
Wow.
I'm thinking about putting down some felt or paper stuff that the moisture goes through so I can plant and not have so much weeds. Is there an advantage or disadvantage?
What type of material do you want to use?
And I've had two knee replacements, two back surgeries, and I'm not dead yet. I have to keep going.
Well, and it's the garden that's keeping you going, but you're saying you want to put down some kind of material to suppress weeds around your plants, and this is a vegetable garden?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm not a big fan of landscape fabric. I think that doesn't do anything for our soils. What you could do that's very inexpensive is just put down cardboard. And then if you don't like the look of the cardboard, you can throw straw on top of that. And that's a quick and easy way to do it. And while the cardboard is there, it'll be decomposing during the season. Would that be a possibility?
It could be, yeah.
Just be careful, Ted, though, because sometimes the straw on top of the cardboard can be slippery.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that
I've
fallen or anything. But
you
know.
Always want a stable pathway and mm-hmm. firm foothold on anything. Yeah. Yeah.
But cardboard is a great way to do it. It really is inexpensive. So
yeah.
Yeah. But landscape fabric can get kind of icky, for lack of a better word, underneath.
I call it the devil's claw because of all those different yards I was moving to, I'd go to dig a hole and what would I find? Landscape fabric. Just drives me crazy.
Yeah, and the worst is landscape fabric with gravel on top of it.
Oh gosh, And then, you know, the weed seeds are still going to pile up on top of the landscape fabric and they're still going to sprout. You know?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. We were talking, a little bit ago about the raised beds, which are wonderful. And I love the fact that you've got wheels on some of those beds so you can move them to different parts of your lawn. What are some other options that I know you've got some of those in your book. There's a chapter on that. There's different pots and things like that. Why don't you talk a little bit about there's so many options now where, 10, 15 years ago, there really wasn't.
Yeah, back in, just as maybe 10 years ago, there weren't as many choices with lightweight pots. I mean, I'm still a person that loves a good terracotta pot. I love glazed pots, but I'm phasing them out in my yard. And so going to pots that are, I don't necessarily want to say plastic. Some of them are made out of fiberglass or resin, things like that, different materials. There are even some that are upcycled and zero carbon, but those are so much better looking than they used to be. I mean, sometimes you can look at them and you'll think it's a kind of a fool the eye kind of situation where it's like, wow, that's not really terracotta. And so that one, that's just the obvious step. Just get lighter weight pots because up in Minnesota and Wisconsin, we all know what happens at the end of the season. Those pots go in the garage or they go somewhere. They're not going to sit there. So, or sometimes maybe they can because they're frostproof. Always look for a frostproof. I can't talk today. Frostproof pot while you're doing that. But then there are other pots. A lot of them nowadays are self-watering, which is a great thing. If you're forgetful or if you travel a lot or just to help you out, with those daily chores in the middle of a hot summer. So anytime you can get a self-watering pot, that's a great thing.
I got two of those last year and I am in love. I need more. It's amazing, especially when it's super hot and one day goes by that you forget and, you're your plant can be toast, and they're too expensive to let die. So yeah, those are wonderful. Those are wonderful. So,
and then another great container thing that I hadn't done before until last year when researching the book was grow bags. And so grow bags, that's a whole new thing. First of all, they're lightweight, and you can dump them out at the end of the season and store them in a very small spot, which, you know, if you live in a townhouse or an apartment, condo, something like that, that's, you know, really a valuable quality to it. But beyond that, they're easy to kind of move around. You do have to make sure that you keep them watered. They can dry out a little bit, but, you know, more than a regular pot. But the other thing was so fun. I grew potatoes in a couple of these grow bags, and they had little viewing windows where you could pull up this little Velcro section and look at your potatoes and check them out. That was really fun. So, and then the other thing, they're really healthy for plants, because when you have a plant in a plastic pot and they hit the edge of that plastic, the plant does not behave the same way as it does with a cloth pot, the grow bags. And when you're in the grow bag, those roots hit that edge, and they have what they call, it's kind of like air pruning. And so the roots become more fibrous versus spiraling around and getting root bound. So just they're just a fun option. I suggest people try them.
I've seen photos of that where they kind of do like the air pruning, and I thought, wow, what a great idea, because it's got to be so much healthier for those plants. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah.
Any other thing that you discovered while you were doing this research?
I also was able to get one of those plant towers where you have the different modules that stack up. Oh, I'm using my hands and people can't see what I'm doing.
I do it all the time.
I think there are two of them that are most popular. One is growing tower, and then the plant stalk. No, what is it? Green stalk. There you go. Vertical planters. And so they go up to about my height, which is about 5'8". I think they're right about there. And you've got usually like 30 to 50 growing modules. And then you water from the top. And so water trickles down. And testing mine this past year, I grew strawberries, I grew shallots, I grew herbs. I even grew some little bush beans in there. And I was really surprised at what you could do. And once again, you're not really bending over anything. Just really fun. And it kept the strawberries away from the rabbits, which is always a win. So yeah, anytime you can grow vertically, or elevated, that's the way to go.
What kind of soil are you using in those?
I was just using regular potting soil, because you want to keep it light. You don't want it to get bogged down, and you don't want to use garden soil, because, if it's the tannins or whatever will leach out of there and stain your patio.
Sure.
Yeah.
What about tools? Because like the lady who called said that, you know, she has arthritis in her hands. That's always a problem.
Well, I just think there are so many new tools now that can help people. Ergonomic is a word that means designed to make things easier for you to fit your natural movements. Mm-hmm. And a lot of trowels now have ergonomic handles. They're more bent than straight. They're more of a curve type handle. There are specific adaptive tools that you can search through the Arthritis Foundation that are certified by them. And sometimes they have like a cuff that slips into the trowel or the little cultivator, and it fits onto your arm like a splint. And so first of all, the handle is more like an upright grip. I can't describe this too good on radio. Once again, using my hands. But you've got this more, it's more like a handle type grip that is vertical versus, the usual scooping type movement that you would make. And then you can also get that cuff, that splint type thing, adaptation there. And that will help give you more leverage. And then just in general, anytime you can use any kind of long-handled tool versus a short-handled one where you don't have to get down on your hands and knees, that's a great thing to do. I find myself nowadays using my hoe versus getting down there with a cultivator a lot of times.
I agree. Our guest is Rhonda Fleming Hayes. She's the author of Garden for Life, Strategies for Easier, Greener, More Joyful Gardening as We Age. Do you have questions for her about maybe plant choices or any kind of things, the tools that maybe make life easier, or even a gardening question? She can answer that for you, too. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. And, of course, you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us again Monday. Larry will be back to talk about the history of the earth with the author of a new book. And the lone weather guy, Steve Ackerman, will be with us to talk about the latest study on global warming. Right now, we are talking gardening, of course. And our guest is Rhonda Fleming Hayes. She's talking about her book, Garden for Life. Rhonda, what are... what are some things besides plants that are good for changing your garden up? You'd mentioned a little bit about putting some things in to bring in hummingbirds, but you also have pictures of things like, you know, seating areas, and I loved your checkerboard little area. I think it was checkers. What are some other things you can do?
Well, I think that when gardeners are given a challenge or a question about what to do in their yard, they immediately think plants. But maybe plants aren't the only solution. Sometimes it's hardscape, or it's an activity or something like that. I'm not asking anybody to pave over paradise, but sometimes maybe a patio area where there once was a perennial bed might actually get you out in your garden to enjoy other parts of it. Anytime you can add seating areas, that's a great thing. I talk about putting way stations in your garden, especially if it's a larger area. And all that is, you know, those old-fashioned way stations, I think they have them in Wisconsin. They're like a simple rest area. But, you know, when we're out there gardening, we get hot, we get winded. It's great to have a place to sit down. So maybe station a chair or a bench around your garden. Make little vignettes that are restful, where you can go for respite, where you can sit down and have a drink of water or something. You know, doing something like that. Or once again, water. Let's bring water into the garden. Maybe instead of planting another bed or adding more plants, add a pondless water feature. And that's going to still be very gardeny, but it's going to be something that doesn't require weeding and things like that. And wow, once you bring water into a garden, that brings life. And there's so many great things that will happen then.
Yes.
So there's, you know, or put a seating area out front and say hi to your neighbors as they're walking by, something like that. The social connection is a big part of why gardening is so good for you. And so anytime you can make some kind of social connection, that's what Jill was talking about, a picture in my book where over on Lake of the Isles, there's somebody that has a chessboard situated into the front of their garden, and people stop by and play chess.
So I love that.
Plants aren't the only solution.
I love it. Okay. Well, we've got Jack in River Falls who has a question. Go ahead, Jack.
Hi there. This is Jack. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
My question is about a good height for raised beds. So I'm moving from somewhere where I had both raised beds and in-ground beds. And I just had a birthday that ends in a zero, and things are starting to change and move a little bit. And I'm wanting to preserve my back. And, you know, I have some issues with my hands a little bit already. And I'm thinking that I want to go maybe 18 inches with open to the ground underneath, but I'm just trying to get some feedback on what might be a good height or a good balance of height ergonomics?
Well, I think 18 to 24 inches is a good place to be. And you know, usually the taller it is as you age, the more happy you'll be with it. But, you know, you don't want to get it so tall that you can't reach into it or you can't dig in it, you know, per se. A lot of raised beds are determined by what size boards you can buy. But so as far as, you know, they're dimensions, but the height, it depends upon what you want to grow. You know, starting at like 8 to 10 inches, that's okay. But if you want to, you know, grow tomatoes and larger things like that, 18 inches to 24 inches is a really good height. Another reason not to go too tall is the taller it is, the faster it will drain. I have very large raised beds in my garden, and I think of them as a really large container. You know, they drain fast, which is really great for your plants, especially vegetables. But yeah, you need to keep on top of the watering. So consider that. I have a little drip irrigation and little misters built into mine. You might want to think about doing something like that. That's not hard to do anymore. There's lots of different little mini irrigation systems that you can put in there too to make sure that you have consistent water. So yeah, go for those raised beds.
Okay, don't be afraid of those zeros, Jack.
No, I've got one coming up in a few months.
Okay, let's go to Sturgeon Bay, and we have Stella with a suggestion. Go ahead, Stella.
Hi. I was just calling in. My husband is a devotee of self-watering pots, has been for many years, and has made many of them himself, very inexpensively. So I wanted to let you know that that's something you can do for yourself, and here now to describe one such sample.
Hi, this is Rick. I took pails. They're like 5-gallon pails, but they're half ice. And then I took hanging planters that have a small water reservoir underneath them. And I took off the small reservoir, and I fit them into the pails, and cut a hole inside of the pail above the water level to allow air to get into the roots, so the roots get oxygen.
Well, that sounds very clever. Jill, can you hear the train in the background?
I can hear something in the background.
The train's very close to us, and
the city of New Orleans?
Blowing its horn very insistently. Sorry about that, but I did hear what he said, and I think that's a great thing. I think, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money when you can. You've had, you know, one of the great things about growing older is that we have all this wisdom that we have acquired.
Exactly, and usually time to kind of work it out too. So, I mean, my goodness, 5 gallons. That's a lot of water. So you probably wouldn't have to water for, you know, all season long. I love it. Well, thank you, Stella. And I didn't catch your husband's name, but Mr. Stella, thank you.
I think it was Rick.
Rick and Stella, thank you for sharing that with us. That's pretty cool. Let's go on to Mel in Superior. Go ahead, Mel.
Yeah. I have some Cranesbill alongside my house that I got from the next door neighbor about 3 years ago. Every winter, the rabbits or the squirrels are eating it. So it never gets much bigger than your hand. How do I stop them from eating it?
Oh, gosh, those rabbits. Well, you know, the only thing that really stops them is to put up some kind of barrier. You can try different sprays. But they need to be reapplied every time it rains. I will say that one of my gardening colleagues, Pamela Hubbard, who has a new book out about cottage gardens. Hey there, Pamela, giving your book a shout out. But she lives in Pennsylvania, where she deals with rabbits and deer. And she says that one of the tricks is to start spraying very early in the season, and to mix up the different kinds of sprays. So you would be getting all these different brands of sprays because they all have a different type of icky ingredient in them that they use to repel rabbits or deer, and to keep consistent on that spraying, that might help. Get a dog. Those rabbits, they're so frustrating, and I don't know if there's one size fits all solution to them. But Cranesbill is so nice, and I don't know which one you have. I have that variety that's that pale pink that smells like kind of like lemons when you crush the foliage. So I hope that you would be able to get it to grow.
Yeah, maybe some kind of a barrier would be the best. I mean, I have a dog.
There's
he doesn't keep the
cute
rabbits away.
Yeah, so there's lots of cute garden fencing, but the holes are still big enough that baby rabbits can get through. So, I've had to start using kind of a wire grid around my raised beds, and that so far has kept most of them out.
Like hardware cloth or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck, Mel. That's, you know, you make a choice. You live out and you live in an area where it's got wildlife, which is great, but these things can happen. So I guess you have to make that choice. So we have a quick question from Kurt and Poignet. What is the difference between activated potting soil and regular potting soil?
Well, I would assume that activated potting soil is something that has a built-in fertilizer. I don't know if I've actually thought of or heard about the word activated with potting soil. What does it say it does?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Lee can use his fast little fingers in the
you can buy potting soil that has built-in water crystals, which I don't really care for. You can buy it that has fertilizer built into it. So I would imagine that's what activated means.
That sounds about right.
I didn't know we were going to play Stump the Gardener.
Yeah, where's my buzzer sound?
Yeah.
Lee says that activated potting soil differs from regular potting soil primarily in its biologically active.
Oh, okay. That it has
nutrient
more
density and intended purpose.
Okay. Maybe it has like mycorrhizae fungi in it or something?
Living medium.
To
feed plants and soil microbes. So.
Okay, something more in the permaculture line. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's got like compost in it and microorganisms and good stuff like that.
Sounds good. Well, yeah, I don't usually put compost in my potting soil because I think it tends to bog down the soil. I think you want really light soil in your containers.
Mm-hmm.
So
it sounds like it would be heavier.
If they've got something that is not going to bog your soil down but feed the plants better, that's great.
Yeah. You know, we've only got a couple of minutes here, but I noticed that there's a theme in your book, Rhonda, about sharing. Did you notice that, or is that just something that just kind of comes from you or to you? But you're sharing a lot. You're sharing vegetables, you're sharing plants, you're sharing your knowledge. Is that something that gardeners just do?
I think lots of gardeners do that. I think we're very community-minded, and I think we're very generous people. Personally, for me, and maybe it doesn't come across because I'm talking with you on the radio, but I'm very introverted. And gardening is my bridge, my buffer when it comes to communicating with people. And if you put me in a cocktail party, I will sit in the corner and probably not like and be looking for the exit. But put me in a room with people and talk about plants, I'm good. I can do that. And so I think plants are my way of interacting with people. It gives me purpose. So yeah, and I always in the last part of my book, it's a call to action to make sure all of us people with those zeros on our birthdays that we're making sure to share that knowledge with younger people.
Well, thank you for sharing with us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jill. You're so easy to talk to.
Well, thank you. We've been talking with Rhonda Fleming Hayes. She's the author of the book Garden for Life, Strategies for Easier, Greener, More Joyful Gardening as We Age. And thank you for listening. And thanks to our team, Claire Neipert, Joel Patenaud, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, and of course, Larry Mueller. I'm Jill and Joe, executive producer of The Larry Mueller Show. You have a wonderful weekend.